Asurarangana Brajajanarangana Asurarangana Brajajanarangana Yamunathera Vanachari Yamuna Thera Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kija Bihari Kuti Jana Balava Jajanarangana Jajanarangana Jamuna Thera Vanachari Jamuna Thera Vanachari Jaya Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Radhe Shyam, Jaya Radhe
Shyam,
Jaya Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan. All glory is to the Assembled Devotees. All glory is to the Assembled Devotees. All glory is to the Assembled Devotees. All glory is to the Lotus Seed of Sri Sri Guru Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 7th chapter, text number 18. Atar babam vinischitya pratitasya pinatmana
tam chapi
yushmacharana sevayaham pananude atar babam vinischitya Pratishtasya pinatmana
Pratishtasya pinatmana
Tam chapi yushmacharana
Tam
Sevayaham Paranude. Please chant. Somebody? Shouldn't dismiss this chanting of the sloka responsibly. Prabhupada was very particular about it and liked that everyone should do it. Artha Bhavam, without substance. Vinischitya, being ascertained. Pratisthasya, of the apparent values. Api, also. Nah, never. Atmana, of the self. Tam, that. Cha, also. Api, thus. Yusmat, your. Sharana, feet. Sevaya, my service. Aham, myself. Paranude, shall be able to give up. Translation. But, my dear sir, I am obliged to you because now I can understand that this material manifestation is without substance, although it appears real. I am confident that by serving your feet, it will be possible for me to give up the false idea. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The sufferings of the conditioned soul are superficial and have no intrinsic value, like the cutting off of one's head in a dream. Yet, although this statement is theoretically very true, it is very difficult for the common man or the neophyte on the transcendental path to realize this practically. However, by serving the feet of great transcendentalists like Maitreya Muni, and by constantly associating with them, one is enabled to give up the false idea that the soul suffers from material pangs. Om Jnana Timadam Dasya Janam Jana Shalakaya Chaksuham Nirvamina Tasmai Sri Guru Maha. Mukam karoti vachalam pandum lam jayate girim yapi dhatam aham bande shri gurum din tarna avancha kapatiri vischa kripa sindhu vahe vacha patitanam pavane vyo vashti vyo namo namaha jaya si krishna chetan prabhu nitananda shri advaita gadadha shivasi gaura vaktananda hare krishna 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 hare 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 rama My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune, and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisances unto you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. By your recitation, one attains transcendental bliss, because your syllables shower pure love of God. You are to be served by everyone, always, for you are an incarnation of Lord Krishna. By the recitation of the Bhagavatam, one attains transcendental bliss. This is what we aspire for, a very blissful and devotional service. And why? As it says, because the syllables of Bhagavatam, they shower love of God. I would imagine everyone that got up this morning had a shower this morning, and that cleanses all the impurities from us. The hearing of the Srimad Bhagavatam cleanses the impurities from our heart, just as an external shower cleanses the impurities of the body. The words of the Bhagavatam cleanse the impurities of the heart and bring about transcendental bliss. Therefore, the Bhagavatam should be served by everyone. Nitya Bhagavata Sevaya, always. Not just, you know, for an hour today or this or that or maybe tomorrow, whatever, but we should always serve the Bhagavatam. And how do we serve the Bhagavatam? By hearing. By hearing. That was a theoretical question. We serve the Bhagavatam by hearing. So today, as we have all the students here, and as this verse itself deals with taking shelter of the lotus feet of a saintly person, I wanted to speak about some of the pastimes of Abhiram Das Thakur, whose disappearance day was yesterday. He's a very, very important personality. There are some acharyas in our Vaishnava line that everyone, oh yeah, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, yeah, we all know about these people. Yeah, yeah, you know, all these different individuals, the Sadhu Goswamis we know. But then there are other personalities that are extremely important in our line that we may not be quite so familiar with. Abhiram Gopal Thakur is one such personality. Abhiram Gopal Thakur was the favorite devotee of Lord Nityananda. Think about that for a moment. Lord Nityananda says, you're my favorite devotee. You know, sometimes your friends will say, you know, you're my favorite of all my friends, and it just makes your heart feel so good. Thank you, Prabhu. So, Nityananda, this is... Now, Gaura Gunadesha Deepika, written by Kavi Karnapur, this is interesting, because imagine you're a devotee, and between yourself and the highly purified vision of your father, who in this case was Shivananda Sen, you can look at devotees and understand who they were in their past lives in Krishna Lila. Quite an amazing accomplishment, and even more so an amazing service, because it helps us to understand these great personalities. So Gaura Gunadesha Deepika shows us that Abhiram Das Thakur in Krishna Lila was the favored cowherd boy of Krishna and Balaram named Sridham. The nature of the cowherd boys is always to be playful. So one day, Krishna brothers, all good stories start like that, right? One day Krishna and Balaram and all the cowherd boys, they were at Govardhan and they were playing in the forest there and different games, and they decided to play hide and seek. Now, Sridham is very expert at playing hide and seek. I'm sure you've all had this opportunity of playing hide and seek, and some of you are much more expert at hiding than others according to size and according to expertise and according to ability to blend in, you know. Sometimes you see those paintings where somebody is standing against the wall and they're painted like the wall or the chair or whatever on their body, so they blend right in and you don't really know they're there. No, expertise in hide and seek is like that. You gotta... So at any rate, what happened was that Sridham was hiding very expertly. Now, at this point came the time for Krishna and Balaram to go to Navadvipa and take part in their Gauralila. Now, we may think in our linear way of thinking, okay, 7 o'clock is going to the temple, 7:20 is greeting the deities, 8:30 is class, like that. The spiritual realm has no linear time frame like that. The pastimes of Krishna involving the cardboard is going on eternally, and at some point, whoosh, they can go and take part in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. So this is what happened. In the middle of this, okay, let's go to Nadia. Let's go take all of our pastimes there. And somehow, they forgot to go and get Sridhar, who was so expertly hiding in this cave. So they've all gone another dweep. They begin the Sankirtan pastimes. And everything's going on nicely. And suddenly, Gaura looks and he realizes, wait, Sridhar's not here. Our favorite of the cowherd boys. He's always making us feel so wonderful. Oh, and Krishna faints as Gaura. Gaura faints. Now, some people are looking and think that he's fainted due to the ecstasy of the Sankirtan. But in reality, he's fainted due to the separation of his dear Sridhar. So regaining his consciousness, he calls out, where is Sridhar? Where is Sridhar? So Nityananda picks up Gauranga, embraces him, and says, I will go and find him. Don't worry, my lord. This is another amazing thing. The ability, you know, sometimes in science fiction books or science fiction films or whatever, individuals have this ability to move between dimensions and move between time periods. Well, where does that come from? It comes from the pastimes of the cowherd boys. Nityananda's in the pastimes of Gaura Leela. All right, I'll go back to Krishna Leela and I'll get Sridhar and then we'll come back to Gaura Leela. You know? No mechanical vices required, no transporters, no special consoles with buttons, just boom, by their spiritual potency. This is the amazing thing about the spiritual potency of the spiritual energy. These things can all be done. So, goes back to Vrindavan, goes to Govardhan Hill in the area where they were playing, starts calling out, Sridhar, Sridhar, oh Sridhar, come out Sridhar, Sridhar. Now, Sridhar hears this and comes out and he sees this personality. Let's keep in mind the appearance of Krishna and Balaram and the appearance of Gornatai are a bit different. Even in our deity form, they're different. Same personalities and in different yugas, there were different heights. People had different sizes according to the yuga too. So Sridhar comes out and he sees this little short. Now, of course, Nityananda was extremely tall for the time, but for the time of Krishna's appearance, not so much so. So he sees him, he says, who are you? You're calling my name. Nityananda said, don't you recognize me? I'm your dear associate, Balaram. He looked at him, he said, you don't look like Balaram. He said, oh, come on, don't you recognize me? I'm Balaram. Sridhar said, everyone knows that the two hands are equal, right? Your left hand's not bigger. I mean, you know, maybe, you know, it's not centimeter, but your left hand's not significantly bigger than your right hand. Your hands are the same. And when you bow, they line up like that, right? So he said, I'm going to clap my hands and start running around Govardhan Hill. And if you can catch me, then I'll believe that you're Balaram. It's a challenge. A race and a challenge. Everybody loves both of those. So, Sridhar takes his dhoti and he pulls it up between his legs and tucks it in. You know, some of you boys are expert at that. Pulls it up, tucks it in, claps his hand, off they go. Running around Govardhan Hill once. Running around Govardhan Hill twice. How many of you have done pilgrimage of Govardhan Hill? Oh, a small number, yeah. 14 miles. Running around like this, you know. And after he's going at great speed, and his dhoti became a little loose and started to fall, so he had to stop for a moment, not totally stop, but slow down enough just to fix his dhoti, and he turned on his shoulder and he saw that Nityananda was right there next to him. So Sridhar stopped. He said, all right, I'm sorry I doubted you, but your appearance in this Kali Yuga form had me very confused. Anyway, why have you come looking for me? And he says, Krishna in his form as Gauranga has fallen unconscious due to your separation. Sridham said, where has Kanai gone? And Chinanda told him, listen, I will tell you very carefully. We've all gone to Navadvip Dham for the Lord's pastimes of Sankirtan. If you come with me now, then you'll be there and we can complete our pastimes together. Sridham said, nope, I'm not going. And I said, why? He said, well, first of all, to go to another time period, I have to go into the womb of a mother and stay there for 10 months. I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. Now, this, of course, is just the verbal humility of the associates of the Lord. They appear and disappear by their own sweet will, almost mystically. He says, and besides that, you boys all went off to your Navadvip Leela and left me here by myself. So I'm not going anywhere with you. Sound like boys playing and fighting with each other? Yananda said, all right. Anyway, let's discuss this matter with Krishna himself. Let's go. For the time being, you can come dressed like you are. So Sridham laughed. He said, all right, I'll come. But you have to carry me on your shoulders. After all, from all this running around Govardhan Hill, not once, not twice, but three times. Let me see, what's that, 14 to 4? What's 3 times 14? Who's the good math? Come on, 3 times 14.
42.
There we go, 42 miles. 42 miles. After all this running, my feet are very heavy. I can't walk anymore. Nityananda said, no. If I carry you, then you'll advertise to everyone that I was tired from running after you. And therefore, I lost and had to carry you. So this way, a little back and forth was there. Anyway, Sridham finally said, all right, anyway, you and I are just the same. So we know that sometimes when Krishna loses, one of us carries him and the other like this. But Chinanda said, Krishna is very much controlled by your love. None of his pastimes are beyond your perception. All the other cowherd boys, they sing your praises. Come on now, let's go to meet this Gauranga. What a wonderful invitation. Let's go meet Gauranga. You want to go meet Gauranga? Who wants to go meet Gauranga? No, the rest of you don't want to? Who wants to go meet Gauranga? All right, mostly everybody. We'll drag the rest of you along just for fun. So they make this transition to the pastimes of Navadvip. And on the way, Sridham dressed himself appropriately. However, it was very, very uncomfortable, we could say, when Sridham saw all the associates. First of all, they all had shaved heads and sikas. Coward boys don't have that. I mean, Madhu Mangal does, because he's a Brahmin coward boy, but they all had nice hair and done in top knots, and, you know, so they all had shaved heads and sikas. They're all dressed in dhoti with chadar and no jewelries, no, you know, this, that, and the other. So this is all a little confusing to him. So Mahaprabhu explained to him how in Kali Yuga, they're there to help the people renounce material enjoyment so they can cross over the ocean of birth and death. And then he explained to Sridham that Gaura Leela and Krishna Leela, they're one and the same. Cowherd boys, kirtan partners, one and the same. So I've come here just to give the taste of devotional service. And then Nityananda looked at Abhiram and he smiled. He said, so we will call you Abhiram. Because he was Sridham, and each of the, if you read Gorgona Desha Deepika, each of them took different names. So Nityananda says, we will call you Abhiram. You are our brother. But in our previous pastimes, you were so tall. But in this pastime, you can also remain taller than the rest of us. So, you know, the difference in height wasn't required. Anyway, Abhiram understood this was a subtle hint by Nityananda. So by his own desire, he made himself the same height as everyone else. Just imagine, we hear these things and we think, yeah, okay,
whatever.
But these are the mystical qualities and the amazing potencies of the spiritual associates of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, interesting, in Krishna Lila, we had 12 prominent cowherd boys. Those 12 prominent cowherd boys, they became the 12 prominent associates of Lord Nityananda in Gaura Lila. They were known as the Dvadasa Gopals. And these Dvadasa Gopals were headed by Abhiram Thakur. Years later, after Mahaprabhu left his Navadvip Lila and took sannyas, and when Nityananda eventually became married, and when Nityananda had his first child, then Abhiram Thakur came to offer obeisances to the child. Now, each of the associates of Lord Chaitanya during Gaura Lila had different amazing qualities. And if you've listened to anything about Vaishnava Acharyas, you know that they all had these incredible qualities. Now, Abhiram's quality was that if he offered obeisances to a stone that was said to be a shalagram but wasn't a shalagram, and this is not uncommon because some questionable people try to sell stones that are not shalagram or shalagram. So sometimes you find that a stone ends up in someone's home or on an altar being worshipped, but it's not really a shalagram. Expert can look at these stones and tell. So Abhiram, if he offered obeisances to a stone and it wasn't a shalagram, it would burst into pieces. Self-imploding, you might say. Oh, that one wasn't real. But you just imagine line all your shalagrams up. Okay, Abhiram, one at a time. Oh, good. Oh, yeah. So, in this way, he came to Nityananda's house to offer obeisances to the first son of Nityananda. And he died on the spot. The child departed. Now, this happened for six of Nityananda's children in a row. Each one, Abhiram would come, offer his obeisances, the child would die. Now, there is a deeper esoteric meaning as to who these six personalities were and why they took their birth. This is a theme throughout our Vedic literatures. We see this happen from time to time. So, in this way, Janava, Mata, and Vasudha were becoming a little concerned. These are the wives of Nityananda, of course. And Balaram, in his appearance as Nityananda, was manifesting for the sake of Lila certain human-like characteristics. So he was quite unhappy that all his sons had died. So when the next child was born, when they were having the big Mahotsav, celebrating the birth of this child, Nityananda said to himself, he said, if this Abhiram comes, this child might not live. So in sending out all the invitations to everyone, he did not invite Abhiram Das Thakur. Imagine that. Your best friend, you got a birthday party. No, I'm not inviting. No, he doesn't. Don't send him an invitation. So this is what happened. Now, at that time, Abhiram Thakur was in Shantipur with Advaita Acharya. And a Vakreshwar Pandit happened to come to the house at that point. And he inquired, Abhiram, Nityananda's having this big Mahotsav. You're not going? And he chuckled. He actually laughed about it. He said, I have not been invited. What? You were the Padan Gopal. You were the main cowherd boy. How has he not invited you? He said, no, he's afraid his child will not live if I come. Vakreshwar said, Abhiram, the ceremony will not be complete unless you are present. Abhiram said, how can I go without an invitation? And Abhiram's wife, Malini, said, she spoke to Vakreshwar, said, Abhiram, he is a cowherd boy. And cowherd boys, they have no false ego. So whether he is invited or not, he's not going to fault Nityananda. This is just the way things have gone. So Abhiram said to Vakreshwar, anyway, I will go there later at some time. So after Akrishwar left, you know, Akrishwar had put this idea there. I mean, the idea was already there, but Akrishwar had been the vehicle. So after Akrishwar left, Abhiram turned to his wife Malini and said, all right, I'm going. So he started off down the path to the Ganga, chanting, Gaura, 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 Hari!
Gaura, 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 Hari!
Are you like half asleep out there? Gaura, 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 Hari!
Gaura, 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 Hari!
So he got to the bank of the Ganga, across from the village of Nityananda. And the boatmen are all lined up there. You know, you go to the bank of the Ganges at any major crossing, there's several boatmen. And he looked at the boatman and he said, boatman, take me across the river, please. And the boatman looked at him and said, what is your name, sir? Abhiram said, what does it matter? What is my name? We're not becoming friends or anything. I just need you to take me in a boat across the river. Why are you asking? He said, well, Nityananda has instructed us not to take this personality named Abhiram across the river to his home for this festival. And from the description that Nityananda has given us, you look like you're that Abhiram. So I cannot take you. If I do, Nityananda will become very angry with me. Nobody wants Nityananda angry, and nobody wants Nityananda angry at them. So he said, therefore, I cannot take you. And then the boatman did something very uncommon. He took a rock, and he broke a hole in the bottom of his boat and sunk the boat. Now, I have no boat. I can't take you across. So Abhiram turned to go to the other boatmen, and each of them was taking a rock and breaking a hole and sinking their boat. This is their livelihood. But well, better I sink my boat and don't do anything with it than get Nityananda angry at me. So Abhiram, he chuckled at this. He took off his chudder. He flapped it open, like, you know, sometimes you flap your chudder open. He laid it on top of the waters of Mother Ganga. It floated there. He sat down on it, and he floated across the Ganga. The boatmen on the other side, they saw this. They all ran to tell Nityananda, Abhiram's coming, Abhiram's coming. So Nityananda realized, okay. The different authors, when they're telling this pastime, conclude this part of the pastime by saying, who can understand the activities of Abhiram Thakur? So Nityananda took his senior associates, the Puruhits, the priests and all. They went down to greet Abhiram there and then brought him back to the home. And Abhiram said to Nityananda, he said, I'm very hungry from my journey. Please give me some prasadam. So Nityananda sat him down, and Janava and Vasudha came and served him nice prasadam, sweet rice, some fancy opulent vegetable and nut rice, and you know, many, many different types of dishes. And as much as they brought, Abhiram ate all of it. And he finished everything that was in the house prepared for the festival. Now imagine, you've got a big festival, you're cooking for 100 people, one guest comes and eats it all. I have nothing for everybody. So Nityananda said, my dear Abhiram, all obeisances to your pastimes. Who can understand you? In Braj Lila, you are Sri Dhamma, cowherd boy. But have you forgotten our loving relationships? In Braj, we would all take prasadam together. But forgetting that, you have eaten all the prasadam. In this way, how will I have prasadam for the rest of the guests? Abhiram laughed and he said, yes, my nature is that of a cowherd boy. First I take my own prasadam and then I see if there's any left to give others. That is my behavior as a cowherd boy. But are you sure I ate all the prasadam? And I said, no, we brought everything from the kitchen. You ate it all. You know, go to the kitchen and look in your pots and see what's there. You know, went into the kitchen. All the pots miraculously filled as they were before Abhiram ate. Another of Abhiram's amazing pastimes. So, after prasadam was done, Abhiram rinsed his mouth. He took little tambus and spices to freshen up the breath and aid with the digestion. And then he said, so Nityananda, you're celebrating the birth of your child. Let me have his darshan. The moment. So if you bring him in here, then I will offer my obeisances to him. And Nityananda's wives, Vasudha and Janava, approached Abhiram very humble. Oh, this time, please give protection to our child. Don't let him die. Don't let us be criticized as having no son. If you offer your obeisances, we are so afraid he will die. Every time this has happened before. If you do it again this time, then we will die also. Abhiram said, why are you fearful? You simply don't understand. I am offering my obeisances to test the child. If the child is Svayam Swarup, the Lord's pure spiritual energy, then it will not be affected. If he is an imposter of that spiritual energy, then he will die. So the child was brought forth. Everyone's tense, waiting. Abhiram offers obeisances. He gets up. Nothing happens. Abhiram says, oh, he offers obeisances a second time. Nothing happens. He offers obeisances a third time, and then Abhiram gets up and says, oh, joy, joy, joy. So he took the child on his lap and began to dance ecstatically. He said, this time, we have not been cheated. Now, of course, that child was Virabhadra. Virabhadra was the son of Nityananda, who did many, many wonderful things. Matter of fact, it was said that he looked very much like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Abhiram told all the great mahants and devotees there, Yena dekecha goda deka araboy, punabar se goda vira avatar. So that those who did not see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could again have the opportunity to see him, the Lord has appeared in this form as Virabhadra. So in this way, he gave very, very amazing prediction as to the activities of Nityananda's son, Virabhadra, how he got there, and what he did. Now, he's a cowherd boy. Cowherd boys like to play instruments. We see sometimes during the class, different devotees are playing their instruments on their knees and their laps, and you know. So he liked to play the flute. So one day, in a mood of total spiritual madness, he began searching for a flute. And he saw the large trunk of a tree that had some holes in it. Now, 16 strong men could not lift that tree trunk. But Abhiram picked it up and played it just like it was a flute. Such were his pastimes. Abhiram had a bamboo rod, stick, whip, different names. It actually had a name. If you read the book called Radhakrishna Gonadesha Deepika by Rupa Goswami, he describes all the different paraphernalia and associates of the Lord, and all the different paraphernalia, like the earrings and the flutes, and they've all got names. So Abhiram's whip had a name, Jaimangala. All glories to auspiciousness. And this whip brought great auspiciousness. If he struck at you with it, prema, love of God, boom. One time Srinivas Acharya came to see Abhiram, and Abhiram struck him with that Jaimangala. And Srinivas manifested ecstasy. And then he struck him a second time, and more ecstasy. And he went to strike a third time, and Malini, Abhiram's wife, stopped and took him by the hand and said, no, Prabhu. He's just a young boy. He can't take this much prema. So, anyway, these are some of the pastimes we see of Abhiram Thakur. And connecting those pastimes to today's verse, we see that it is essential to take shelter of an advanced devotee. In the verse today, we see that, well, actually in the previous verses, I believe it was text 15, after a series of questions Vidura has put before Maitreya, he's expressing his doubts in those questions. And Maitreya, one by one, answers them in the previous verses and eliminates them. And in verse 15, what's that, three verses before this, Vidura says to him, O powerful sage, my lord, all my doubts about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entities have now been removed by your convincing words. My mind is now perfectly accepting of them. This is the duty of the spiritual master. We go before the spiritual master and we place our questions, our doubts, our uncertainties, and the spiritual master corrects those, eliminates them. There's a very famous verse from the Bhagavad Gita where Arjuna says to Krishna, this is in the 10th chapter, verse 14, he says, Oh Krishna, I now accept totally all you have told me is truth. So this is the principle of Bhagavad Gita, is that Arjuna has some doubts and he's questioning one after the next. What about this? 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 And one by one, Krishna answers them all, to the point that when they're all answered, Arjuna says, I now accept everything you say as truth. This is the nature of the relationship with the spiritual master. This is how we learn our knowledge. Now, the Sanskrit in this particular verse, there's three very important words. Yusmat charana sevaya, by serving your feet. In other words, by taking a humble position and admitting that we don't know everything, therefore, let me take instruction from someone who does. It's interesting, this particular paragraph I had designed specifically for the students, and I've misjudged, and they're all gone. But it's good enough for all of us to hear. So, this is the nature of a humble person. I don't know anything, so let me take some instruction from someone who knows more than I do. And this is what our students are doing in the school. This is what any student does in the school. They take instructions from the teacher, they learn from the teacher, and as a result of that, they develop knowledge as a result of that learning. Now, if you sit in the back of the class when instruction is going on and don't pay attention, or if you sit in the back of the class and talk back or argue with the teacher, or if you don't make any effort to study, then you won't learn anything. I've mentioned this in connection a few different times, but when I was a young brahmachari, we had 5 classes in Shastra every day, the temple I grew up in. We had our Bhagavatam class, then after breakfast and cleaning duties, we had a class in Nectar Devotion, then we had a class in Shresha Upanishad, then in the evening, we would have Bhagavad Gita class, and then before going to bed, we would drink hot milk and read Krishna books. So 5 Shastras a day. And studying these, one learns. Now, if one doesn't study, doesn't pay attention, then you won't be successful. That learning process won't take its effect. Now, it requires humility to take such a position. It doesn't matter, you know, in material life or spiritual life, this type of humility to learn must be there. We have to learn from someone more experienced. If you want to be a lawyer, you practice law under a senior lawyer for some time. If you want to be a mechanic, you go and work in a garage under a master mechanic who knows what he's doing. If you want to be a salesman, you learn from a senior salesman. My entire life has been selling something. And my father was a salesman. He owned a sales company. And his first instruction to me was, after you show your product to the customer, you don't say, so would you like to buy one? He said, you never say that. Your next question is, how many would you like to purchase? So this was the instruction my father, a senior salesman, gave to me, a junior salesman. How many books would you like to have? So this aided me in my Sankirtan. So at any rate, in this way, we have to submit ourselves to someone that can instruct us, that can guide us, that can give us direction. Now, in this purport, Prabhupada, it's a short purport, but Prabhupada makes a very powerful statement. He says, the sufferings of the conditioned soul are superficial. And although this statement is theoretically very true, it is difficult for the common man or the neophyte to realize practically. Wait a minute, what do you mean my suffering is, you know, superficial? I'm really in anxiety. I'm really in distress. The circumstances I find myself in just cause me nothing but difficulty. How can it be superficial? Because it doesn't actually relate to our true spiritual life. In other words, we can easily realize the truth of our existence or realize the truth of spiritual life itself very easily. So how do we do that? You're telling me that all this experience I've got in this world that seems to be linked to my suffering, to my anxieties, to my distress, that it's superficial, doesn't really exist. And yes, that it's very difficult for someone to understand. So what do I do? Prabhupada finishes that with the second half of this book. However, whenever someone says however, you know there's going to be something added in. Yes, I can give it to you for that price. You go to purchase a new car, right? The price on the window sticker is whatever. You go to the desk to pay for it. Oh, very good. However, we have to add the taxes, we have to add the charges, we have to add the fee, when, you know, so now, oh, it's something else. So here, Prabhupada says, however, okay, your material life is superficial. You can't understand it. However, by serving the feet of a great transcendentalist like Maitreya Muni, and by constantly associating with them, one is able to give up the false idea that the soul suffers from material existence. So, yes, we can transcend that. Prabhupada says in the first part there, he says it's theoretically very true, but very difficult to understand practically. So how do we understand it practically? Sadhu sangha, sadhu sangha. By associating with devotees, by hearing from devotees, particularly great transcendentalists. Therefore, Prabhupada encouraged us. I've worked so hard to produce these books. You must read them. You must study them. You must hear from them. The process of, as the prayer at the beginning that I recite, the process of the Bhagavatam, the process of hearing is about purification, is about rendering service. And what is that service? That service is hearing. That service is giving up whatever else is in the periphery and focusing on the message being given. And that's the understanding of Bhagavad Gita. Fourth chapter, verse 13, we all know this verse, tad vidhi prani pratena prani pratena shevaya upadekshanti te gyanam gyaninam tasvadarshina. These two words in there, pari prashnena sevaya. These two words in that verse, they say the whole thing. By inquiring and rendering service. Not just the inquiry, not just, how do I get there? What do I do? You know, no. Submissive, humble inquiry. We see when Vidura is placing all these questions before Maitreya at the first part of this chapter, he's doing so in a very humble way, in a very sincere and submissive manner, so that he can get the instruction. If someone is questioning in a very challenging way, sometimes I would have the opportunity to do questions and answer booths at the big Woodstock Festival in Poland with Indraduma Swami. And, you know, you get somebody in the crowd that starts, you know, they put out these challenging questions. Their mood is not that they want to hear. They're not interested in what the answer is. They just want to challenge, you know, just for the sake of argument. That's such persons we don't waste our time with. So in this instruction from Bhagavad Gita, we see the proper mood of inquiry must be. Inquiry is required. Of course, it's a common joke, you know, husband and wife are driving somewhere, they get lost, and the wife says, I think we're lost. I'm like, no, we're not lost. Well, just ask somebody. No, I don't need to ask anybody. I know where we're going. You know, the typical example of the male false ego. I know where I'm going. I don't need to ask. We don't know where we're going. None of us do. We need to ask. And this is the whole principle of Pratipashena Sevaya. Inquiring and rendering service. Submissive and humble. This is the heart of the sadhu. This is how we purchase the heart of the sadhu, the heart of the teacher, the person who's instructing us, by this submissive, humble mood. And this is tantamount for the process of learning. It's equal to the process of learning to understand how to make these inquiries. So this is the most valuable lesson that we can get on the path of devotional service, is to understand association with devotees and hearing from those devotees, especially those senior devotees, especially great transcendentalists like Srila Prabhupada, Maitreya Muni, and so on like that. So we'll finish there. Thank you very much. If anybody has any questions, we can take maybe 5 minutes of questions. I have to kind of head out. Never to disappoint.
Very nice class.
Triangle Benefit.
Very nice class. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I have a just a curiosity to want to see your angle of vision. In the purport you read, the man is seeing his head cut off. So, who is the seer? And the seeing object, like for an example, I mean, I used to have a dream, bad dream sometimes. The feeler, I, Pram Govind Das, is real. Feeling object, like maybe, I don't remember my dream, but maybe lion attacking me, maybe that is not there, is illusion. But my experience, that I experience the feeler, you know, frightened, that is real. I cannot deny I'm eternal. My experience is eternal, maybe in that object. So in this case, that person seeing his own head chopped, he has to have an eye to see, I mean, who is...
Well, Prabhupada notes in a dream. So in a dreamlike state, our actual consciousness is somewhat dormant. The physical body is completely dormant, but the functions of the mind are going on. Prabhupada gives the example, just like we know there's gold and we know there's a mountain, so maybe in our dream we see a golden mountain. So the golden mountain has no reality. I mean, you know, maybe in Lanka or South America, I won't even go there, but at any rate, so, you know, maybe in that circumstance. But for the regular situation, no, mountains aren't made of gold, they're made of dirt and stone and trees and so on. But in the dreamlike state, different things have come to be accepted as reality. Prabhupada also gives the example of the tiger. You know, we may be chased in a dream by a tiger and we're running and screaming and crying, and we wake up and, oh, we're just laying here, there's no tiger. You know, now if we wake up and there's a tiger in the room, okay, then we got a problem. Or some great potency, one or the other. But there's a separation between that. So the observation, the imprint of this is there, but it's not reality. So we may be perceiving any of these things in our dreaming state, but they don't wash over to our real state. The illusion washes over to our real state because we're accepting this body as the fact. In the dream, I'm accepting that there's a golden mountain. I'm accepting that I'm being chased by a tiger. I'm accepting that my head has been cut off. Of course, some dreamologists, is that a dreamologist? Yeah, some dreamologists, they say that if you see your own death in a dream, that you're going to die. I don't know if that's true or not. I've fallen off of many cliffs in my dream. I had this reoccurring dream when I was a young boy of going off a cliff in my tricycle. And I always woke up before I got to the bottom. So I don't know. But the point is that these dream things, they're observed by the consciousness, but they're not the real reality.
So to the one who is out of dream, for him,
within the dream, we're thinking it's real. But that whole dream state is illusion.
There's also lucid dreams where people know they're in a dream.
What's all that?
There's also a thing called lucid dreams where people know that they're dreaming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've experienced that, I'm sure.
Yeah, and the fact that you had a dream you're going to die is actually true, because we're all going to die. So that dream was actually a reality to it.
All right, there we go. Steve Tadamoni does it again. All right. All right, we'll finish there. I've got to run. Thank you very much. All glory.